From the Maize and Right Media Center, it's Straight Talk with DJ Hilson, your Muskegon County prosecutor. Straight Talk with DJ Hilson, an in-depth discussion on issues that affect you and your community. Sparking conversation, opening dialogue, and breaking down barriers. Have a question about crime prevention, subpoenas, silent observer, or about the law? Call 231-722-8338. It's Straight Talk. Straight Talk. Straight Talk. With DJ Hilson. DJ Hilson.
DJ Hilson. Hey, good afternoon, Muskegon. DJ here live in the studio. He's live.
He's back.
He's back. Yeah, it has been a while. I don't know. It's been two months. 2 months seems like a long time, and I don't quite think it's been 2 months.
You don't think it's been two months?
No, no. I mean, between me being here or calling in, I get credit for the call-ins, too, man. That's just not fair. That is not fair. Although I did listen, you cut that song short. That was good. I had the headphones on, man.
I was dancing.
Oh man, I was feeling it. That gospel stuff is really awesome.
Yeah, very moving.
Good motivation. Get the old brain and heart pumping and ready to rock and roll.
Yeah, absolutely. So how you been, DJ?
I've been really good.
How's things really good at the county?
County building. We're moving along. You know, it's been kind of a tight. I think earlier this month I was supposed to be in, and I indicated to you guys that we had a pretty significant budget meeting in front of the county commissioners that particular Tuesday that I had to be at. We didn't walk out of that until about 5:30, and so. You know, it is. For this upcoming fiscal year, it's going to be a lot of departments, including mine, will be tightening our belts. It's nothing to sneeze at, and you know, we were having to make some very tough decisions because of the deficit we face, and you know, that's true for all departments, and it is. It is what it is, but at some point in time, we've got to be able to find a good source of revenue. Otherwise, we're going to be losing our ability to provide good customer service in all areas of the county government because we just won't have the folks to get to stuff in a quick and efficient manner. And at some point in time, you know, obviously it's all about less government spending, and I'm okay with that. But then, you know, you start to lose your ability to serve the people that you're, you know, serve the community, serve the county in the various departments or expertise that you have. And for my department, I mean, obviously, we want to make sure that we are efficient, but we also want to make sure that we have the resources in order to ensure that justice is served. And you know, that's that for me going forward in these next fiscal years, that's going to be my launch point, is that at some point in time, there isn't much left to give back, because if we do, we are going to be short-circuiting our ability to certainly help the victims of crime, but more importantly, help make sure that justice is served. And so, you know, that's been really consuming a lot of my attention probably over the last 2 months as we've been working with the administration and getting the numbers and recognizing what our responsibilities are. The good news is, since I've been in office, we've always come under budget. The office has, we've never overspent. We've never been over. We've always been under, and that's been true since, like I said, since 2012. So, you know, I feel that our office has been very fiscally responsible. And yet we're still in this situation. So, this is the part of the job that nobody really understands, that is part of, you know, the other half of what I do, is the, you know, certainly the maintaining and running the office, but also managing and making sure, that we are spending the money that we're tasked to spend, in a wise fashion. And so that's the part that that doesn't get the news media attention. You know, the cameras aren't coming to my office saying, "Hey, so how are you balancing your budget this year, Prosecutor Hilson?"
From now on, that's what we're going to try to do every year, is see how your budget is coming.
That's right. You know, I mean,
we'll be the difference.
Yeah.
So what does it take to run the prosecutor's office? like, do y'all get free investigations? Y'all don't have to pay the police or whoever to investigate certain things?
Well, see,
how does that work?
Here's the beautiful thing about the Constitution, all right? So the Constitution requires that we are the charging authority. And in order to have that, we have to have a crime happen, certainly, and a crime investigated. So it's not that we get free investigation. Either township or municipality has a police agency, whether it be the sheriff's department in some of the smaller townships or the cities like Muskegon and Muskegon Heights have their own police departments. And so the citizens of those cities and townships pay for that service. So when they pay for that service and they investigate crime, then they police cannot charge a crime, essentially. Now, they can write a ticket. And so they have some charging ability, but ultimately it's the prosecutor that has to enforce the tickets they write or the charges they request. So we are the charging agency, and everything flows through us. And so it's not that we're getting anything for free. We're just, you know, we are the county entity that takes in everything that the local cities and municipalities gives us and then turns around and, you know, essentially prosecutes the offenders of those crimes.
How much does it take to run the prosecutor's office? How much money?
Well, I mean, it's like I said, you know, our budget has been varied. And so a majority of the budget for my office is the salary and fringe benefits of the employees. All right.
Okay.
So I think we're running at about a $2 million budget right now for the office.
Every year.
And like I said, a majority of that is salaries and fringe benefits of the employees. And then obviously I have line items for extradition. I have line items for expert witnesses. I've got a line item for, you know, office supplies, those things. Everything's got a line item.
Okay.
And so, you know, obviously
there's... And that $2 million is included in expert witnesses, office supplies?
Oh, yeah. Because
I know how much paper and ink we go through around here. I can only imagine your paper and ink bill is over
all
there.
That. So, yeah, all the overhead expenses from, you know, storage, for instance.
We
have to move our files, our old files, once the case is done and over with. We box them up, and once the boxes get full, we send them for storage because I have a statutory obligation to hold on to files for 7 years, all right? So I've got to hold on to old files for 7 years, and so we have to store those, and I don't have room in the office to do that, so we have an off-site facility that we rent, you know, that manages that for us.
And you got to pay for that.
We got to pay for that. Got to pay, you know, every you know, so it's all those little ancillary things that start adding up. You know, the pens and the paper and the toner for printers and copy machines. All that stuff adds up.
Does your office own your copy machine or do you rent it?
The county has lease agreements.
Okay.
So essentially the county, you know, obviously the more that you lease, the better the price
is. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, the county has a lease option and all the various departments fall within that. And so they negotiate that. We don't necessarily negotiate our own copy stuff. They negotiate that. And then what they do is I think they look at departments that have heavy use. Because nowadays the copy machine not only serves as a copy machine, but also a scanner, a fax, and a printer.
Right.
So, you know, for instance, when I'm working on stuff and I need to print, I print to the copy machine. I don't have a printer in my office. My printer is the big copy machine. So, it's nice in the sense that these machines are multifunction type machines where one machine does a lot.
Right.
But it constantly gets used, and we're a department that has a heavy use for that type of, as you can well imagine.
I mean, paper.
Paper. So, I mean, you know, it is. It's an interesting process. You know, it's one it's been a learning curve for me since I started, but, you know, it's something that I got to do. I mean, at the end of the day, I got to make sure that I have enough employees to get the job done, and that I'm making sure that I have that I ensure that they're getting paid appropriately for their position. Now, that to me, I can't lose anybody. I really can't. Mm-hmm. I can't lose employees because we're already, I could probably use about three or four more staff people. And that's never going to happen. But I could use it. I mean, they would be as busy. We'd still be busy, but I could use it to help kind of regulate some of the overflow that we have. So, but, you know, we work with what we got. And everybody kind of pitches in, including myself.
Now, is there a way your department could digitize most of the paperwork mm-hmm. that you need and everybody be issued a county iPad or whatever and stuff like that to cut down the cost on some of that paper?
Yeah, the county has been actually in the process countywide moving to an electronic content management system. That's been going on for the past 2.5, almost 3 years.
Okay.
There are some departments that are in it. We're in phase two, so right now we're in the process of helping the company, ImageSoft, who is basically managing the system for us, helping them create a program or a system that meets our needs.
Because you guys' stuff has to be secure.
Well, it does, but every department's different, you know, and how the paper flows. So our paper flow is different than, say, Circuit Court Records paper flow or, you know, District Court Records paper flow. So it's all different. And so basically we're in what's called the discovery phase, where a couple weeks ago we spent two full days with the computer people going through what our process is like in the office. So they can then take that and develop it into an electronic content management system. So at the end of the day, when we are up and running, what's going to happen is that departments, police departments, are going to take their complaints, they're going to write their reports, and they're going to push everything electronically to our office. And once they do that, all the information, like the person's name, date mm-hmm. of birth, mm-hmm. all that, is going to get populated into our required program. So that really we're just kind of pushing buttons essentially at that point in time, pushing things through the office and then ultimately electronically pushing it to the courts. So instead of, you know, police officers having to drop paperwork off at the desk, we take that paperwork, we issue the charges, that paperwork then gets split into two, where one file's being created for us, one file's being created for district court, again paper being, that's all going to be done electronically. So as you said, either whether it's iPads or laptops, you know, we're going to be carrying that around instead of a big old stack of files. So we can go to court, punch it up, and get whatever file we need and all the information in that file.
And I know that would drive PA just bonkers. I mean, PA hate going to the store to buy a soft drink. Okay. Yeah. So I know that would, if he had to do all that jargon back and forth paper, can't we just email this to each other? You know, all that kind of stuff. That would drive him bonkers.
I'm looking forward to it because, you know, it's we're in that age now. We're in that digital age where we can do that. And what's nice is obviously that's going to save some time. I mean, it's going to save on cost, obviously. We won't be producing all that paper. We won't have to worry about a separate storage facility anymore.
Absolutely.
Right? We'll have digital files now instead of paper files.
Right.
And it just creates a lot of efficiency. The downside is that you're relying on that system to work. Because the minute that it crashes, you go, okay, now what? Well, if I can't get my files, I guess I'm going home for the day. That's the downside. All right. There are some folks that just they need that paper. You know, they need that paper in front of me.
Right.
I find it so much easier to do it digitally than to mess around with paper. It's just cleaner for whatever reason for me.
Wow.
So we're just at the beginning stages, and so I'm trying to think. The departments in phase two are us, district court, I think probate court. Those are the three that are in phase two. And circuit court, family court, I should say circuit court records and family court are up and running already. It is a slow process. And then there'll be a lot of hiccups along the way because that's just as you're trying to develop something that, you know, incorporates everything that you do, you know, and you always are going to forget something because – that's just the nature of it. You know,
right.
Wants some little nuance, and that's why they, you know, they do it in stages. So this is, you know, we're in the process of helping them develop the program, and then ultimately when we get to the point, they'll test it, we'll run it through, and then we'll hopefully find the gaps we missed before mm-hmm. it actually goes live and we're actually immersed in it.
Wow. Now, changing gears a little bit. You
Here
have
we go. Changing gears. You got your list.
Right.
Big Rob's got a list.
I got
list. You know, it was like I get here, you know, and he hasn't been here for 2 months. And so he and PA, they got in this huddle. You know, they got in this huddle, and they wouldn't let me see what they were doing. It was like, we're going to throw a curveball.
A few of them.
Yeah. And so they got in this huddle. And they're like, okay, yeah, ask him about this. Yeah, write that down. Okay. But don't like rapid fire, because we want this to last, you know, for at least an hour. We got to go at least an hour. I mean, listen, I have never felt like an outsider as I did 5 minutes before we went live with the show. And I thought about just saying, you know what, man, I'm out of here. I'm
let
walking.
Let me escape this one.
I'm walking.
You got, this November, I believe it is, you got somebody running against you.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Okay. What can you explain to people what it takes to be a prosecutor
sure.
besides charging people?
Well, look, I mean, obviously, you have to be a lawyer. You have to have a law degree. You know, in my opinion, I think you have to have some level of experience as it relates to prosecution. I don't think you can come into this job with no experience whatsoever, whether it be in the courtroom or handling criminal case. If you have no experience in that arena, this is a very difficult job. I mean, you are making oftentimes making very critical decisions. And, you know, and we're handling some pretty significant and heavy investigations just in the last, you know, 3 months.
We're going to get to that, too.
Oh, yeah. Just in the last 3 months, you know, there have been some pretty significant things happening in this county. Whether it's, you know, the Jeffrey Willis investigation, you know, and the ties to the two pretty, what I would say, very, very significant unsolved cases involving Jessica Herringa and Rebecca Bletch.
Yeah.
You better have some kind of knowledge in order to navigate that. Not only navigate how you're going to assist the agencies that are investigating that and what role you're going to play and how you're going to play it and what you're going to do as far as when you're going to make charging decisions and how you're going to handle that, but also dealing with the media on that. Mm-hmm. You know, that in and of itself is a very delicate matter because
absolutely.
You have to be sensitive to the fact of your ethical responsibilities as a prosecutor, because there's a separate rule of ethical responsibilities for me that, you know, and I take those very seriously, that we're not going to try a case in the media. You know, I just can't go out and start talking about and blabbing about, you know, pieces of evidence or, you know, statements that people have made, including the defendant or suspect. I can't do that. Ethically, I'm barred from doing that. You have to, I mean, there is a delicate balance. And so you have to have, in my opinion, you have to have some knowledge of some criminal basis, some criminal law background. And it's not just what you read in a book. All right. I mean, look, we all went to school. We all, you know, read textbooks, and what you learn in school is important. That's great, but when you transfer that to the real world, you will immediately, and everybody that's done that knows there's a big difference between real world and school world.
Okay.
School is good because it gives you that foundational knowledge. That's important.
Yeah.
But until you get out there and see how it's applied, because everywhere it's different.
Absolutely.
Everywhere it's different. And until you get your feet wet in that, you can be book smart all day long. But if you are not common sense or street smart, as I like to say, mm-hmm. in the occupation that you're in, your book smart is only going to take you so far. And then you're going to get run over. Wow. And this job in particular is one where I think you have to have some institutional knowledge of not only the community that you're serving. That's mm-hmm. that's critical.
Yeah.
But also the office in which you intend to run. You better have some good institutional and background knowledge on how that runs, how that functions. And, you know, from my standpoint, you know, I've been doing this for 17 years, and I was an assistant for 13 years prior to that.
in this office. And certainly, you know, I like to think that I've got that institutional and background knowledge and how things have operated. You know, and I've put my own, obviously, my own spin on it.
I've put my own managerial style.
I've put my own philosophy behind a lot of the things we've been doing. And that's important, too.
Absolutely.
But in my opinion, I've got that foundational. I've got clearly the foundation. I mean, because when I started at the very beginning. And I worked all my way up to the point where I was a top-level felony trial lawyer before I had the opportunity to run. And so I knew every nook and cranny and aspect of that courthouse. I knew every single judge. I knew every single nuance of those judges, right?
Right.
And I knew a lot about all the communities in this town. And thankfully, I was elected, and I've been able to even enhance that now.
Absolutely.
With all the things that I've done.
Yeah.
I've been able to really get my claws, so to speak, in Muskegon County.
Right.
And really get to know its people, its communities, and what I think is important to push this community or this county to the next level. And so, you know, that to me is what it takes. It takes a lot of hard work. It takes a lot of dedication. And more importantly, it takes a lot of passion. Because this is not an 8-to-5 job, and it's not a sit behind your desk job. It just isn't. I spend very little time sitting at my desk. Very little time. Just because it's just not. I mean, that's not where the work gets done.
Right.
It really isn't.
Wow. Now you not only serve Muskegon and Muskegon Heights, but you serve North Muskegon, Dalton Township, Mona Shores,
every single
Roosevelt
township
Park.
And city in this county.
Where does it go north? Where does it end north?
I'm trying to think where it ends north. You've got Montague, I think, is the last
city.
Yep.
Okay.
Last city before you cross the border into Mason County. Mason County? No, Oceana County. Excuse me. Oceana County first, then Mason County.
Well, so to become a prosecutor, you have to have a law degree.
Yes.
And do you have to have any experience, or could you just be fresh out of college and say, I want to be a prosecutor? This election's coming up. I want to
Sure. Hey, run. Look. It's a democratic process, right?
Right.
So, yeah, you could graduate from law school and say, you know what? I'm going to run for prosecutor. You could do that. I mean, I would hope that folks that were kind of contemplating, you know, okay, do I vote for the person that just graduated from law school? Do I vote for the person that actually knows what the heck they're doing?
Absolutely. I agree.
That is, you know, those are the things you gotta weigh. Now, the only job that has a level of experience restriction is judge. You have to be a lawyer for 5 years before you can run for judge.
And you could run for judge with no courtroom experience.
Sure. You could be a behind the desk lawyer for 5 years and then one day decide, you know what, I'm going to run for judge. And as long as you've got that 5 years in, you're good. You still have to win, obviously, but
absolutely,
you can run.
But prosecutor,
no requirement. No level of experience required. Just you have to have a law degree.
Well, good luck. I hope whoever your opponent is, you know, knows that you're very well liked in this community and all that. I want to move on to some other stuff. The shooting, I know you can only, you know, there's
sure.
a box you're in.
Yep.
Okay,
yep.
I understand that. So when I'm asking these questions, know that I know that already.
Listen, I'm not going to yell at you.
The officer involved shooting.
Yeah.
Can you? How's that investigation going?
It's going actually very well. Friday during the day, state police turned over their investigation to my office for review. We spent yesterday and today reviewing that, and probably tomorrow as well. We're working on, you know, our final kind of opinion on that. And we've had a lot of good things to look at. You know, the state police did an excellent job of interviewing all the all the parties involved and you know, people, witnesses. We had the benefit of a 911 call. We've had the benefit of a cruiser video to look at. You know, like I said, they've done a really nice job of putting it together for us to review. And so we're in the process of going through that and making sure that we read the reports very carefully. You know, I've watched the video probably, I don't know, umpteen number of times. You know, just to make sure that we have all the information in front of us. And certainly, so it's a combination of having the facts and then looking at the law and how it relates to those facts, just like we would in any other case. You know, ultimately we'll come to a conclusion. And I'm hoping to have that here before the end of the week.
Now, is it a board of prosecutors that No. goes over this, or is this something that the head prosecutor has to be involved with? I know you have assistants, and they mm-hmm. sometimes you're not always in office. The case come through or whatever and stuff, and they say, yeah, we're going to charge them with this, and you're pretty much okay with that because right. you trust them doing their job.
Right.
Is an officer involved shooting that serious where your eyes has to look upon every single piece Absolutely. Of evidence, whether for charging or against charging?
Yep. No, look. I mean, when we're dealing with something like this, my top people are, including myself. So myself, right. my chief assistant, and my chief trial. Mm-hmm. Those are the three of us mm-hmm. have been reviewing and coming up with, you know, how the law relates to the facts. All right. So at any time we have something like this, before anything goes out, it'll be after my review and approval. Because ultimately, my name's going on it.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
My name's going on it.
The buck stops with you,
DJ. Yeah, my name's going on it. So, I mean, I'm going to make sure that I'm heavily involved in the process and that that the final product does not go out until I sign off on it.
Oh,
so, yeah. Okay. So, I've met with the detectives, state police detectives, about a little under a week ago. And as I said, they provided, at that point in time, I had an opportunity to review some of the things. And then there are some things I wanted them to do as far as follow-up is concerned. They were able to get that done and turn over the final report to me, my office, on Friday. We spent the last 2 days here kind of going through it and working on the report. And like I said, I mean, I'm anticipating something by the end of the week being released.
On that. Yep. Okay. Norton Shores, we haven't heard much about that murder.
Yep.
I mean, I've tried to contact North Shore's Police Department, but they haven't returned any calls or anything. So,
well, you know, that one, obviously, they're still working on. We've had some really good, positive leads on that. I personally have not had a chance to sit down with the detectives working on that to get kind of an update. But I do know that, like I said, they've been able to get some good information, follow up on that information, and now we're just kind of weeding through some of the, I won't say difficulties, but you know, in some cases,
in every case there's a difficulty.
You know, in a lot of these cases, sometimes the individuals you're dealing with don't necessarily, you know, want to cooperate.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So we're working through that. But I think, you know, they've done a really nice job and have been able to collect some pretty important information. And I'm hoping to, you know, sit down with them here in the very near future to see kind of where we're at and what we need to do, what we can do as a prosecutor's office to assist anything that they're working on. I mean, we've done some search warrants for them. And so I'm pretty I know there's some pieces of evidence that are at the lab to be forensically looked at. And that'll take a couple, at least a month to accomplish. So that case is moving actually in a very positive direction. I like where it's going.
But very slowly.
Well, yeah, I mean, sometimes that happens, you know, mm-hmm. Sometimes that happens. Although, you know, we're in a situation where we had some folks that were able to see what happened. And I think based off of that, we've been pretty fortunate to make some positive steps forward. So
has anyone been charged in that murder yet?
No. No, we haven't made any charging decisions yet. Like I said, I'm kind of from my standpoint, when it comes to these investigations, typically we take the approach of we're here to assist in whatever mm-hmm. capacity you need. A lot of times it's, you know, going out to the scene initially and providing whatever legal advice or other, you know, for instance, search warrants that they need at that point in time. Then it's a matter of letting those folks do their job and then us becoming a sounding board for them as they work through it. And ultimately, for me, I always like getting updates, you know, just kind of sitting down and saying, okay, where are we at? Where are you guys going? That kind of thing. And I haven't had that opportunity yet with those investigators. So I'm hoping to get that accomplished here in the next couple of days, just to kind of see if there's anything else that we can do as an office to help move that case forward. But I feel pretty confident that we're going to come to a resolution in that one.
Oh, okay. Good. Now, moving on to my next one, sex offender cases.
Sex offender cases.
Can you explain, I know you probably have done this already, but can you explain the differences in the CSC's
sure.
criminal sexual conduct?
Sure.
What is the differences and why are they so different?
Sure. Well, I mean, there's 4 degrees. When we're talking about criminal sexual conduct, there's 4 degrees, first, second, third, and fourth. So first and third deal with some sort of penetration. So there has to be some sort of sexual penetration for a first degree or a third degree. And the difference between first and third depends on the circumstances surrounding. For example, CSC in the first degree, there are different variables that elevate the sexual penetration to a first degree level. If you're under the age of 12, if the victim's under the age of 12, mm-hmm. for example, if that penetration is happening during the course of another felony, that raises it to CSC in the first degree. Third degree CSC usually involves, you know, our statutory rape section. So if you're between the ages of 13 and 15 or 13 and 16, you know, that falls within that CSC third degree. Some elements of force involved during the course of the penetration will rise it to a third degree as opposed to a first degree. Now, if you're injured during the course of that rises to the level of first degree. So there are different variables. But first and third is penetration. That's penetration of any area, I guess, to be somewhat politically sensitive.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Second and fourth are the touching cases. So the difference between second and fourth is that to rise to the level of second degree, a lot has to do with relationships, i.e., family members, teacher, student relationships. I think prison guard prisoner relationship elevates mm-hmm. it to that second degree level. So that those are the variables we look at. CSC in the fourth degree is that forceful touching. Between people without any of those relationship variables. All right. So it's your what I like to call is your, you know, you're pinching or you're touching or you're squeezing, mm-hmm. that type of conduct will put you in the CSC 4 category. Then you have two other peripheral charges where you have assault with intent to commit criminal sexual contact or assault with intent to commit criminal sexual penetration. And those are the cases that involve an assault with an attempt to either touch or penetrate without the completion of the act itself. Okay. Mm. So that is that. Those are those cases. So if you assault somebody with the intent to commit either contact or penetration, there are those two levels of charges that we have in order to charge.
Now, I've heard of a law called the Romeo and Juliet law.
The Romeo and Juliet. Yep,
what is that?
That is the... that. When we talk about Romeo and Juliet, that was the legislature's creation dealing with the statutory rape laws. Because a lot of times what we see is it's a boyfriend-girlfriend situation. All right? So the boyfriend is, you know, let's say 17 or 18 and the girlfriend is 15. Or, you know, it's 17 and 14.
Right.
And, you know, when I talk to kids in general about these types of things, what I always tell them is, look, you know, you may think that this is all hunky-dory, but you're not taking into account what mom and dad of your girlfriend are going to think, or right. really what mom and dad of your mom and dad are going to think.
Right.
Because ultimately, they're the ones that are going to be marching down to the police station and saying, I want something done about this. This is ridiculous. And so where the legislature came in with this Romeo and Juliet business is, you know, prior to them making changes to the sex offender registry, if you were convicted of CSC third, regardless of the circumstances, whether it was consensual or not consensual, you were ending up on the registry. And so they changed that. They changed the law about 5 years ago, maybe 6 years ago, where if you can show to the court that the act itself didn't involve force or coercion, mm-hmm. it was truly Romeo and Juliet consent-based, you know, right. boyfriend, girlfriend, that you could be removed from the registry as a result of that. But you had to actually go into court and have the court make a factual finding that, in fact, the particular act that you were convicted of didn't involve force or coercion. And so that's where that Romeo and Juliet language comes in. They haven't yet changed the CSC third statute as it relates to that. They haven't changed that statutory rape section. I would be surprised if they ever did. But they're basically leaving it to prosecutors to use their discretion on those cases. And so, you know, we look at those very, very carefully. Because, you know, obviously, when you're dealing with that particular crime, that has, in particular for 17 and 18-year-olds, that has life-altering consequences.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
So we, you know, we're sensitive to that. I mean, you know, and obviously we listen to the parties involved and the parents and whatnot. And, you know, ultimately there are ways for us to come up with resolutions that I think, you know, are satisfactory and don't carry those heavy hammer type ramifications with them.
So under the statutory rape laws, a parent, like my daughter, she's 14 years old,
yep.
for example.
Yep.
And she's dating a guy that's 16 year old.
Yep.
I can go to the police department and say, I want something done about
sure,
this.
Sure, you could.
And they have to proceed to investigate yep. all of this
yep.
and then turn it over to you.
Yep.
So... And the little, my daughter may say, well, no, I don't want anything to happen to him. Blah, 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 blah.
Happens all the time.
I want him, you know, da, yeah. da, 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 all this kind of mess.
Yep.
And still, that young man can be prosecuted.
Yep.
Wow. Now, while we're speaking on that in the younger demographics, school is getting ready to start for some. School already started.
Yep.
Can you speak again? I know you did before, but I really think it really needs to hit home that talk about sexting.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
that you do. Can you kind of briefly explain to people what I'm talking about?
Absolutely.
Sexting and charges and things of that nature
yep.
also?
Well, you know, I'm gearing up my school tour again because I'm already scheduled to be in one district. I'm working on scheduling a date in another district. And so it is this is a hot topic. You know, my point in going out and talking to students and faculty, for that matter, and parents. I mean, I'm happy to talk to parents as well. But my point is to give them information and make them understand that what they deem to be innocent behavior does carry some pretty significant social, but more importantly, criminal consequences. And so for me, it's going out and letting them know when you do this, okay, when you take a naked picture of yourself and you send it to somebody, or you take a photo or video of you engaged in a sexual act, okay, and you send it to somebody, or you just make the photo itself, whether right. you send it to somebody or not,
right?
And somebody gets a hold of that, and the police investigate that, and they turn it over to me and say, okay, here it is, what do you want to do with it? I'd let them know that, okay, so now I've got to do something with this. I just can't brush it under the rug. Because that's shirking my responsibility as a prosecutor. And so the options I have can be pretty significant. For instance, the actual manufacturing or the taking of the picture or the video, that's under the law, that's considered to be manufacturing or producing child sexually abusive material. And again, under that statute, a child is defined as anybody under the age of 18.
So that person, just so I'm trying yep. to Because I've heard this before.
Yeah.
Trying to make sure people understand this.
Yes, sir.
My 14-year-old daughter takes a picture of herself naked.
Yep. Boom.
That's
creating or manufacturing child sexually abusive material.
So my daughter, who took a picture of herself, click.
Yeah.
And thought it was cute.
Right.
That's manufacturing child pornography. And she can be charged.
She can be charged. Yep. And then obviously, if you take that photograph then and you send it to somebody, all right? Uh-huh. So you've sent it now. That's distribution. That's a 7-year felony, okay?
Even if my 14-year-old daughter took that picture, click, that's a charge. Now she sent it.
That's another charge.
So there's two charges we had so far.
Two charges. So, yeah, I mean, the point is to not be the big bad bully in the room, but it's just to say, look, when you're thinking about this or somebody's asking you to do this, because just the ask is called solicitation, okay?
That's a crime. She's got a 17-year-old boyfriend.
And says, hey, listen, I want you to send me a picture of whatever.
Right.
That's solicitation, all right?
So he's committed a crime now. So he can go to jail or prison.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So the idea is just to give them the information and not be the bully in the room and say, look, I mean, I want you guys to understand and just understand that and just understand the criminal, the array of charges I have to review. Because, again, if the police go out and investigate, right? And they turn it over because, you know, let's say mom, dad, whomever, school says, hey, listen, we got to do something here. We have to send a message because this is a problem.
Yeah.
And so they look, obviously, it's my responsibility to make those decisions. So when you as a student make that decision, then you're giving me the power to essentially determine what your future might look like, right? Mm-hmm. For your bad decision.
Mm-hmm.
Now, look, I'm very sensitive to the fact that we're dealing with kids, all right? Mm-hmm, and I tell teachers this, and when I do parent presentations, I go, I don't swing the heavy hammer around. I don't, because I get it. But don't put me in that situation. Don't put me in that position, right, with your bad decision.
All right.
Because the way I look at it is I look at it on a case-by-case basis. You know, there are certain cases that, you know, the facts deem out to be treated one way, and then maybe the facts are a little more egregious, you know, and there aren't a lot of mitigating factors, and we have to – because what I tell the kids is I'm out here giving you this information so that you know, so that if something happens after I'm gone, right, after I leave the building and I've laid it out for you and something goes down – you cannot look at me and say, I didn't know. I didn't know that this is what would happen to me if I made this decision.
Because you're doing these presentations for free for anybody. You don't charge anybody to go out and do this.
No. This is all part of the job.
You do this for free.
Yeah, right.
So you teach them.
Right. I'm just out there, like I said, I'm out there giving them information. So it's about what the law is, what it is, and what that activity, what that could mean criminally. But I also talk about the social consequences as well. I talk about, responsible social media use and internet use. Because along with, the ripple effects of this are anywhere from bullying to blackmail. All that stuff is a ripple effect to this particular activity. And so the other part of the message is that, look, you are subjecting yourself not only to criminal problems, but you're opening the door for those other things to happen to you. And that is not fun. Because as much as you think that you're going to send this to your boyfriend or your girlfriend, and you've got this great loving relationship, right?
He or she would never
send it to somebody else. I'm telling you, in every single investigation that I've looked at, it has never stopped at one person. In fact, it's usually to most of the school.
Right. Wow.
And so you deal with that humiliation first and foremost, right? Because you're walking down the halls and now everybody's got a naked picture of you.
Mm-hmm.
and the snickering and everything else happens. Mm-hmm. And certainly the bullying happens and the mm-hmm. extortion happens. Everything mm-hmm. comes with that. So, you try to put yourself in the mind of a 16-year-old girl, let's say. Right.
Right.
And it's not 44 or 45. It's 16.
Right.
And what you're dealing with.
Right.
You know, and then you wonder why, you hear these national stories and the statistics about young people who are taking their own lives and
committing suicide.
Right. Dealing with all that. I mean, those are the things that, you know, kids don't think about, right? They are not thinking about 5 or 10 years from now. They're like, now. What's happening now? And I talked to them about the fact that, look, the internet is a great tool. I mean, mm-hmm. I didn't have the internet when I was in high school.
Absolutely.
It didn't exist, right?
Absolutely.
So we did all our research and everything else was by the book.
Right.
Right?
Literally.
By the book. You go to the library, you go to the card catalog, you do that business. You know, you pull in the encyclopedias and the magazines and you're, you know, reading and all that stuff. You know, you're walking around. Now you sit at a computer, the world is your oyster. Right, so it's a great tool, but it has led to a lot of irresponsible use, and you know, unfortunately, that you have the ability to affect people's lives 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You know, you used to be, if there was a bully at school, you went to school and you had the bully. Now the bully follows you home.
Absolutely.
Right. I mean, it's with you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and that is devastating. And so that's kind of what I talk about. Because listen, if you have aspirations of going to college and getting mm-hmm. a good job, don't fool yourself for a second that colleges are not, you know, doing a Google search of you. Businesses, employers are absolutely doing a Google search of you. I tell them every single person that I've ever hired, we do a internet search. I want to know. If they have a Facebook account, what's on their Facebook account? What are they projecting? You know, mm-hmm, what are they projecting? Mm-hmm. Is that an image that I want for representing the Muskegon County Prosecutor's Office?
Right,
right,
right.
And so it's very, very important. Employers are doing that all the time.
I mean, absolutely,
all the time. So, mm-hmm. and that stuff doesn't go away. I mean, you can't hit delete and think, my footprint, my digital footprint is good
because
I've gotten rid of all the garbage. Well. Mm-hmm. No, I'm sorry. That just doesn't fly. Because along the way, somebody has saved that image. I guarantee you somebody has saved that image. And it'll come out at the most inopportune time.
Yep. You wonder why you didn't get that job.
Right. Hey, listen, I mean, I'm telling you, and this is, you know, as I tell them, this is not just a kid problem. This is an adult problem, too. We've dealt with this before where, you know, somebody's in a relationship and, you know, they videotape themselves or whatever, and then all of a sudden, you know, something happens, that relationship ends, and then they end up, like, going out with their best friend, and then that pisses the other person off, and next thing you know, those images are hitting the internet.
But it's different when you're 18.
Different in the sense that we're no longer dealing with child sexual abuse material, yes, but there still are felony level charges for unlawful posting on the internet.
Wow. So these people aren't getting away with they're getting charged.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, wow.
Absolutely. You know, there's no free pass.
But you got to prove that it came from this person.
Right. And you have to prove that, and you have to prove that there was an intent to embarrass, humiliate, you know. There's a broad brush of terms that are very easy to fit into. I mean, the only purpose is to put stuff out there like that mm-hmm. is to embarrass or humiliate, you know, or intimidate. That there is no other purpose. It's not for art, that's for sure. You're not doing it to advance somebody's movie career. Typically, that isn't happening.
Okay. Now, this I read in the paper, and thanks for clearing up, you know, what the CSCs mean, the different ones and stuff, and the Romeo Juliet, as well as the sexting, you know, talk that you do with the kids and stuff. And that not only deals with the girls, it deals with the boys, too. So if a little boy did it, It's same thing, vice versa.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, there's no gender exception to that law. I mean, it is, you know, boy or girl.
Right.
You are subjecting yourself to all that.
Now, I surrendered the paper. There was two guys charged.
Yeah.
With CSC.
First degree.
One, I believe it, I believe it was.
Yep.
And there's a possibility, I think that's the term they use, of 25 charges.
Well, not necessarily 25 charges, but there are, we're anticipating or thinking that there may be multiple victims out there of these two individuals.
Oh, okay.
And that was the point of the story was to indicate that if you had been involved in a relationship with either one of these guys, and you know there was a night or two where you know something didn't seem right, that we wanted them to, you know, we wanted those folks to contact law enforcement so that we could sit down and talk to them. But yeah, I mean, we as the investigation was unfolding, you know, we were getting wind of the idea or the fact that there may be multiple victims out there.
Wow. So when does that case should be moving forward soon?
I think both cases, both defendants now are in circuit court. All right. So they're both, one of the individuals, I can't remember which one, I think it was Mr. Stiff, ran his prelim, and then Mr. Humphreys just a couple weeks ago waived his prelim. And so both are now in circuit court.
Wow.
Waiting trial.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of things that we deal with, and there are certain things that, are I won't say routine, but, you know, are normal occurrences. Stuff like this is something that shouldn't, thankfully, and doesn't happen routinely, but when it does, this is pretty significant. I mean,
right.
What these two gentlemen have allegedly done now, or we
allegedly.
Use the term alleged.
Yes.
To me is, it's just degrading, first and foremost.
Mm-hmm.
Two, it's obviously criminal.
Right.
And they've been charged accordingly. And if convicted, they're going to go away for a pretty long time, which is where they belong. They've victimized several women, and it's inexcusable, and it's not going to be tolerated. It's tough all around. But what these gentlemen have allegedly done to women in this community is going to end up costing them many years in prison. Which is, in my opinion, where they belong. Or I could just put them in a room with all these women victims, tie them to a chair, and, you know, I guess if they come out, great. If they don't, no, I'm kidding. But, you know, those are some of the emotions, you know, those are some of the things where it just grates on every piece of decency that I have in my body. Because there wouldn't be... It wouldn't even cross my mind for a second that I'm going to try and manipulate and treat a woman like that. It just would never cross my mind. And yet we have folks out there in this society that they think about this stuff and they actually do it. And that just, it just drives me crazy. It just drives me crazy. Similar to, you know, people that violate or assault children. I have never been able to wrap my head around that. And I tell you, when I talk to kids, you know, and they're describing what happened to them, it just, you know, your blood begins to boil. You start thinking about what you want to do. as a father of a little girl.
Right.
All right.
Absolutely.
I keep that in my head because I'm telling you right now, anything happens to my daughter, you better run and you better run fast.
I've always said that. Touch my ass, you better hope the police get you.
That's right. You better.
Because I'll go do the time. I know. I walk in the court, DJ. I know you got to do what you got to do. But you know, I had to do what I had to do.
Right.
So let's work this out.
Right.
How many years
can I get
it? You know?
Right.
Something like that. Because, I mean, as a father, man, you got a little girl.
Oh, yeah.
Man, I don't see how these guys. Oh, man.
No.
Boy, I'm like you. They better hope the police get them. Because I would tell the police, you better hope y'all catch them before I do. So I'm going to be coming back to arrest me. I promise.
Oh, believe me.
But, you know, it is a sad thing. And I don't know why a guy, to be honest, would have to do something like that. I mean, because there's so many avenues. And
right.
I know you don't know nothing about that.
I know nothing about
but
that.
But I've been privy to some of that information, and it's too many avenues for all kinds of different things. You don't have to take it.
Right.
You don't have to. I mean, there's so many avenues. You don't have to take.
Right.
Now, nothing. You don't have to violate nobody like that.
I agree. I agree. I mean, it doesn't. Those thoughts would never cross my mind ever. I mean, just would never do it. You know, to think that there are folks out there, and there will always be folks out there that have that mentality. I hope we find every single one of them, and they all get locked up because there's just no place for it. There's just absolutely no place for it whatsoever.
And that's the thing, you know, and I guess me being a father, you know, I don't care how old my daughter gets, she's still my little girl.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and I don't know how those young women fathers feel, but I'm with you fellas on that, because I got one little girl. That's all I got is one little girl. I can't make no mistakes with her.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm telling you, DJ, I would go to court happily. I really would. I know you have to do your job.
Right,
like, DJ,
right.
I know you got to do your job.
Right.
But I'm here.
Right.
I may not cooperate, DJ, but I'm not going to say I did anything.
Right, right. But I'm here.
But I'm here, DJ. But, yeah, I just wanted you to clarify that, you know, for people. And I really believe in that sexting talk that you do.
Yeah.
I think every student needs to hear that. And every student needs to be mandatory.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's kind of the goal. I mean, I'm, you know, I when I get a chance to sit down and you know, kind of craft a email, I'm going to do what I did at the end of last school year, which is write to the superintendents and the principals and say, hey, look, I'm here to offer this for you. I think it's important, and I'm willing to talk to your staff. I'm willing to talk to your students. If you think if parents have questions, I'll dedicate an evening. Mm-hmm. You know, and you can make it a parent night, whatever you want. I mean, I'm here for you guys, and we'll do it. You know, and last year I spent all day at one school, and they broke their ninth through 12th grade down into small sections, and I did eight presentations
in one day.